If you don't work with your accountant and your broker to get the best outcome, then you're shooting yourself in the foot. Because, yeah, sure, you might save a couple of grand here on tax, but as you've just said, like, you then sit out of the market for 5 years. And if that, if you had a boom in that time, you could have, you know, lost yourself half a million, million dollars.
I know, it's like, la, 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 la. Don't worry, I do it to myself at 1 a.m. in the morning. The one that got away like 10 times.
You're listening to Property Investor Tales, stories from the front yard. Here's your host, Tabitha Bright.
Hello and welcome to Property Investor Tales, stories from the front yard, where I get to speak to property investors from around Australia about their investing journey. My name's Tabitha Bright and I'm the head of coaching here at Positive Real Estate, where we help people build wealth through property. With over 8,000 clients across Australia and New Zealand, there are some incredible stories to tell, which hopefully make your journey of investing that little bit easier and will inspire you along the way. So my guest today is Deb Jensen, a fellow coach here at Positive Mentor. And we hear from Deb, her journey from property investing at 22 years old, she started all the way through to a business owner and now coaching in both business and property investing. Enjoy this conversation with Deb. Hi everyone, Tabitha here. Welcome to the podcast. Today we're super lucky to have Deb Jensen on the podcast to chew the fat with me on all things investing, business and coaching. Deb has a very interesting history. She's done a bit of everything, which is fantastic. She started investing early on and had some fantastic results that we're going to talk about today. She's run her own business. And she's also been a coach, a financial coach, and now a coach with Positive Real Estate or Positive Mentor in the exit plan side of things, which is predominantly for business owners. So Deb, welcome to today's podcast. Very excited to be talking to you. Welcome along.
Thanks, Tab. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. My pleasure. We're super lucky. So you're an experienced investor. You've done a number of things. Do you want to share a little bit about your property journey for, you know, maybe newbies that are looking to get started and, share some of your pearls of wisdom?
Sure. No problem. So I started property investing when I was 22. I was very fortunate to, my father was very, has always been in property and was quite emphatic with my brother and I that that's what we were going to do as well. Which, you know, I was stoked about. I think my brother was a little bit more like, cause dad said with your very first paycheck, I want you to buy. My brother was like, I've been at uni all these years. Can't I just have a bit of fun? And dad's like, no, you don't want to get used to that nonsense.
So, property can be fun, right?
So I was very fortunate to have purchased my first property at 22, which I still owned today.
Is that right?
So I purchased that for $50,000 back in 1996.
Wow.
And today it's worth about 800. So
that is nuts. That is nuts.
Yes. So have done pretty well with that one, which is awesome. And I guess, I just found prior to this podcast, an old budget that I had drawn up when I very first invested in that property. And I had $333 a week. That was it.
That's nuts.
I know. So I had to make that stretch. I had like borders. I just did whatever. We renovated. I was, you know, there every weekend renovating and whatnot until we got it done. So I think I spent $10,000 on renovations as well at that time.
Which is massive when you look at it as a percentage. For you to do as a young woman on your own, I'm assuming on your own at 22. Yep.
Yeah.
And so tell me, because one of the things we always talk about at Positive Real Estate, we always say to show me a person that's owned a property for 20 or 30 years that hates it. And it's so rare, right? Because you get to go through 2 to 3 property market cycles, and that's an extraordinary trajectory. I won't even try and work out what the return is on that. Some of you maths whiz will have it in 2 seconds. I'm not going to go there. But from 50K to 800 and something thousand in 20 plus years, I mean, that's a great result. So that must have made you pretty passionate about property.
I think I was always passionate about property. Like, and as much as Dad was the driver of saying, come on, this is what's got to happen. But I always loved it. Like, as a young person on Saturday mornings, you know, this is pre-internet, pre all of those things. Every Saturday morning, I'd get the paper out. That would be me. That was my Saturday morning as fun, would be sitting down going through the real estate pages. I just loved it.
They were great though, weren't they? And I remember when I came to Australia in 97, it was still the same thing. There was a lot of, I mean, it wasn't all paper back at that stage, but there was still a lot of real estate pages. And if you really wanted to be able to look for property interstate, I'd subscribe to a paper, an interstate paper, and get it sent to me so I could go through the local real estate ads. I mean, you think how much the market's changed. And take me back to that first property, though. You were 22 years old. You bought it for $50,000. And did you move into it? Did you?
Yes.
Got it. Yeah. So you moved into it. Do you have any idea what the mortgage cost you compared to your wages?
Oh, look, if I had that budget piece, I think it was $160 a week.
Right. So 50% of your income.
Yeah.
Okay. That sounds about right.
Yeah.
And then you had boarders. So you had people, you brought people in. So you were doing whatever it took in order to get your first step on the property ladder.
100%.
And it's a big part of why Jason Witten often says, you know, the founder of Positive Real Estate, he'll often say, you know, buy well, never sell, or buy well, sell strategically for some of us. So, all right. So from there, where did you go?
So from there, you know, well, definitely at that stage, it wasn't typical for a young woman to be buying a property on her own. So all my friends were off getting married and things like that. That wasn't what I did. I was didn't marry until I was in my 30s. And then purchased another property with my then husband.
Yep.
And and then I must admit, I kind of just dropped the ball for a while. Like, we separated and divorced, and I did whatever I could. Again, another single woman on her own, single income in small business, which lending in small business is always tricky and difficult.
Yes.
So to try and get the lending for both the home that I was living in as well as my previous purchase was incredibly tricky, but I just did whatever it took. And again, took boarders in, did whatever to make sure that I retained both properties because I was just really passionate about that.
And so you kept the family home. Did you have to, I hope you don't mind me asking, did you buy your ex out? So you obviously had to do that. And then you kept the property that you brought in as an asset. All right. And so you've got a rental income against that property, and then you took boarders into the family home.
Yeah.
And did you have children at that stage?
Not at that stage. No.
Okay. So that simplifies it a little, but not to take away from everything going on there. I mean, that's phenomenal. And so then what? Because you mentioned a business.
Yes, and that was, you know, because I was in business as well at the time. So I had, I'd started up a bookkeeping business.
Mm.
So, and that was partially because the marriage had gone down the gurgler. I needed something to stimulate my brain. So I went back to university and did a commerce degree. And as part of that, I thought, oh, well, I'll just do, you know, some bookkeeping. And then that took off. And next minute I've got staff and all the rest of it. So,
wow. So tell me about your bookkeeping business, because you and I have never actually chatted about that. So
no,
I'm
no.
All ears, so tell me.
So rewind that. So my first sort of career, I guess, if you want to call it, was in the family business. So my father had an electronics wholesaling company, and he wanted to retire. So essentially he gave that to me to build up, and I did that. I built the business up and sold it off. And so once I had done that, that's when I was married and all the rest of it. We were planning to do like a 3-month sabbatical overseas, but then the marriage didn't work. And I was kind of in this limbo land of going, what now? I've built that business up, sold it off. I'm doing this degree, going, I need something.
Yeah.
But didn't really have a secure income. I had a job, I think, a couple of days a week, just, you know, ticking things over, but I really didn't have much sort of secure at that point in time. So that's, and I just, because I had built the business and sold it, I just had people asking me for help essentially with setting their businesses up and their, you know, back of office and all that kind of thing. And I was like, sure, no problem. And that's kind of how the bookkeeping side of things came. But it turned into a lot more than that. It was a lot more than that, because it was really helping small business just get organized with what they needed and all that kind of thing.
Right. So you naturally fall into that coaching arena. It's kind of naturally where you sit in your space. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you built that up. What did that look like at its zenith?
So that looked like there were 5 of us, I think, on the team. I ended up selling it to one of my suppliers at the time, who we'd built up a good relationship. And I kind of had enough. Like, it was one of my things that I said, I would love to build a business from scratch and then sell it.
That's cool.
And it was like, tick. Okay, I've done that. I don't need to continue to build a massive behemoth. I'm happy at that point. So, that's essentially what I did.
Oh, that's amazing. And then what?
Then what? And then I had joined, I'd been part of a business coaching group. And so I actually ended up working with them in a coaching and mentoring role, and predominantly in finance coaching, but because of my finance background and everything else. Then from there, my husband actually got sick. So he got prostate cancer. And we had a number of different things on the boil. So this is husband number 2.
Yes. The best husband so far, I call my husband number 2. I'm allowed to call him husband so far.
That's a good one. And also, too, in between husband number 1 and husband number 2, I had a child on my own as well. So that was all lots of...
Gosh, keeping me busy. Have been busy.
Yes. So there was child on my own, as well as being at uni, as well as having my own small business. And so lots to do, lots of hustle.
Yeah.
Sure. It was great. So,
and how's hubby now?
He's good. He has been given a clean bill of health, but
fantastic.
You know, it's one of these things. Sometimes when things are awful in life, it actually, you know, we make lemons into lemonade. And with him being ill, we had several projects on the boil that we were looking at doing. So we were looking at renovating our home that we were living in. We were looking at doing another knockdown rebuild at my father's place, and then also a knockdown rebuild on the first property that I ever bought, because that area has really gentrified and everything else. Now it's like an old property in this beautiful area.
Neighborhood.
Looking at doing that. And it was just like, I just can't do it all. I can't do it all these three projects, as well as hubby being sick, as well as all that. So I took a step back from the business coaching and everything else, and really just lent into those projects and to do those. Some of them didn't come off, but it was really quite good. Sounds awful, but it was really quite good in the sense that it gave me some space to really lean into what is it that I love? Like, and it really reignited my passion for real estate, because as much as I'd always had a passion for real estate, I've had two passions in my life, one being small business and one being real estate. And it sort of, yeah, it reignited that passion for real estate. I remember sitting there one day thinking, what's a role I could do now that has both business and real estate? And then I had a phone call with Shay.
Which is the whole beginning of the exit plan and all of that for small business owners. Well, for business owners, not small business owners, for business owners of all sizes. Yeah, it's an interesting space. You and I were with a client just the other day who had a family member pass away, and it had meant that they needed to totally rejig their what was important to them. And I think, you know, I think I've shared on the podcast before, my husband has also been impacted by cancer, and it does make you, whether it's cancer, whether it's a death in the family, whether it's, you know, whatever life-changing event it is, that most people will have at least one in their lifetime, right? And it's that thing that makes you take stock, because we ask clients to fill out their goals and tell us what's important. This is part of the process that both Deb and I work with when we're working with either property investors of all levels or business owners. That also property invest. So it's really important that we understand your goals so that we know where you're headed, so that we can set a strategy that fits and gets you the result you want long term. And people's goals when they first get started can be so different. And then they have something like this that happens and it impacts you, and it makes you really take stock of what are you passionate about, what's important. Sometimes, not always, but sometimes we strive for stuff that's maybe bigger than we want or need or are actually passionate about, but we feel we need to have a big number. And then you take stock and you go, actually, this family time, a great place where I can entertain people, I don't want to worry, I want to be able to give back. They tend to be the big things that come out of these life-changing events. I think you'd agree. I can see you're nodding there. I was on a bit of a soapbox moment. But I think it is important to acknowledge that, you know, these things can impact, and that strategy will often change to accommodate people's changing situations. So you went and did essentially some developments, and because a knockdown rebuild, did you build two townhouses?
Block's very small. And in fact, all I managed to accomplish out of that was to renovate the house that we're in. We're still, the block is still, it's been approved for council. But as we know, in the meantime of me doing that to now, the build costs have gone through the roof. So we're really in this kind of thing of going, what to do now? Because the build costs have pretty much doubled. From when we started out in our budget. So it's quite scary.
Wow. Yeah. And this is all contributing to this shortage of supply. We did a renovation on this house just prior to COVID hitting. We got in just in time for Christmas. Then COVID hit February, March, or whenever it was. And I remember going out to see my builder and to get him to look at another place that we were thinking of moving to, as you do. Once you do one reno, you want to do like three of them. And he said, mate, like, you're so lucky you did it when you did, because he quoted me 30% more and this would have been probably this time last year I was talking to him about it. So 50% more. It might also depend on where you are as well. So interesting.
So we'd given a budget of 700 for the, you know, to do a knockdown rebuild and put a property in place that was, what would you say, right for that area now.
Yeah. Well
but spent. The estimates are coming in at 1.5.
That is not, oh, I nearly choked on my tea. 1.5.
Right. Yes. And it's only 164 meter square block. So it's huge.
Wow.
Yeah. So hence why we're now having to sort of reassess and go, wasn't planning on that.
Right. So it totally changes the feasibility of the project. And this is where many developers are at, right? They've got all these plans approved, DA has gone through, ready to go, but the building quotes no longer match what was in the feasibility. So many projects are being parked. And sometimes I had another chat actually with a client, you weren't there, Deb, but they were struggling with the idea of supply. They were looking at a development in Logan and in Brisbane, in Queensland, I beg your pardon. And they were saying, oh, but there's 50 of these house and land packages coming on. That's too many. There's oversupply. It's like, but compared to what?
Yeah.
Like, it might feel like a lot if you don't understand the supply and demand in the area. But as far as supply goes, that's next to nothing compared to the demand. So then we take them through SQM research and all the other tools to understand the economics of the market, which is an important part of what Deb and I do when we're coaching clients through the property investing strategy.
Well, Jace was actually talking about that this morning on the on his Wealth Coffee chat, and he was talking about interest rates, but also the supply issue and the fact that, yes, there's a lot of approvals that have gone through, but then the conversion of those approvals just isn't happening. So, so get him while you can.
Oh, well, hopefully long term we might see a little bit of a shift there, or you know, the market will do its thing and it'll make sense again in maybe 5-10 years for you to action some of that. Any other property on the go? What else are you doing?
So we've got an off the plan property that's actually happening in the place, the building that my mum and dad got married. So
that's nuts.
After I'd bought it, but they were like, mum's like, oh, you didn't, do you realize that your dad and I got married there? I'm like, no. So it's an old building in Newcastle called The Store, and they're basically putting a huge big development on that, and we've managed to secure a unit there which looks down over the Newcastle harbour and whatnot. Aww. So
stunning.
Excited about that one. And and then we've got another one in Melbourne. So both of those are since I became a client of Positive Real Estate, 5 years ago now. So after becoming a client, got another one in Melbourne, and then the off the plan for The Store. So,
fantastic. And it's funny, I want to talk about apartments with you briefly, because we often have these preconceived ideas that apartments don't get growth and that they're not a good investment. But I think you'll agree with me, we've seen some outstanding results for clients with apartments. And I mean, even myself, I had some lazy money sitting in super, and I was like, what could I do with that before I retire? And I went and bought myself what people would say, why would you do that? A one bedroom apartment in South Brisbane, which at the time was actually an oversupplied area. But the thing about it was that it had its own micro market, because the developer was such a high quality developer. They had a following, like a cult following. And because it was odds and sods and super, it was all I could stretch to was that one bedroom. I thought, it's better than sitting there in cash doing nothing. And I'm not very good on the share market. Never come to me for shares, property, absolutely. So we bought a one bedder in South Brisbane, and even in the last 2 years, I think it's gone up something like 150, 200K. It's a little one bedder, and it's renting. I purchased it at 400 roughly, and it's renting at 580, and I'm just about to get a another rent increase. So I just got a email today. So depending on the property, and this is what Deb's done, she's gone out and she's purchased a quality property in a unique bespoke development with views to die for. You've got the harbour, it's a premium location. And I dare say the floor plan and everything else that you've looked at, Deb, is, you know, spot on. Because with apartments, the general rule is you don't want to appeal to another investor. You want to appeal to an owner-occupier. People have to want to live there because they're the ones that will pay and stretch a bit more in order to secure the best that they can afford. Whereas an investor, when they're going to buy, they just want to knock you down in price. They don't want to pay a premium to secure something that is emotionally important to them. They're just looking at numbers. So emotional purchases, owner occupiers drive capital growth along with supply and all those other drivers. So I'm sure you'll get a absolutely outstanding result from the one in Newcastle.
Well, the other thing that it has going for it that I loved, which definitely it's an emotive, you know, purchase, is that it's got an acre of outdoor space that they've put on top of another building. So it's got tennis courts, it's got pools, it's got...
Massive.
Yeah, it is. It's huge. So it's got a beautiful outdoor space that all the units look down over. So, which is actually the top of a car park for the train station there.
Oh, it's really cool.
Isn't it? It's really clever.
It's really cool. And once again, this is another thing we're seeing, that people are chasing amenities. People are chasing lifestyle. And I had a client ask me, you know, but Melbourne and all these other cities can just keep expanding and expanding and expanding, but people don't take into account the cost of infrastructure. You've got to put schools in, you've got to put public transport in, tram lines, train lines, you name it, you know, shopping centers, all of that is mega expensive. It's far easier to answer the supply issue with high density living. And then you want quality high density living. And if you've got that, 100%, you'll do well out of it. Remembering everything's a long-term investment. Yeah.
100%. I mean, I just look at, so my husband's a bit older than I am, and his friends are all kind of looking at already doing the downsize thing. They're all moving into town, buying apartments, buying townhouses, you know, so it's already happening.
Yeah.
And it's just going to get, you know, it's going to keep happening and make the supply issue shorter and shorter.
Well, you think about it from an aging generation perspective. Like, I'm a bit older than you. I think I'm 54 and my husband's 52. So he's crook. He's got the cancer thing that we were talking about, cancer battle. And so originally at one point I was looking at moving regional, like every man and his dog with COVID, and nothing against regional. Regional's got, you know, all power to people.
Love regional.
Yeah. Love. Oh, well, Newcastle, I don't count as regional.
Oh, no. I mean, like, I have the same dreams.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
Living out in the country.
gotcha. And, but for us right now, you know, it's about proximity to everything. It's about proximity to the hospitals. It's about proximity to healthcare. Like, we have a nurse that comes out and checks his bloods every week. Like, there's stuff that I couldn't do as easily if I didn't live close to everything. And for me, it's super, super important at this stage of my life. And this is where we do see, like, there's apartments up the road here. I'm in 7K from the CBD in Melbourne. So I'm close to the Alfred, I'm close to Peter Mac, I'm close to the big hospitals, I'm close to, you know, good quality food, shopping, all of that, which is so, so important for us right now. And what we're seeing is a lot of the downsizers. We're seeing these beautiful boutique blocks going up, and There's one just up the road from me, literally maybe a kilometre up the road in Armidale. And that one, the top floor is being sold for $25 million on a main road with tram lines. $25 million apartment.
Wow.
Yep. Another one close to us, $8 million for the top, for the, you know, like that crazy numbers. So when people say apartments aren't good investments or good quality, you've got to say compared to what?
Yeah.
Because it's like saying houses are a crap investment, excuse my French. It's like, what sort of house, where, what build quality, what suburb, what state? So just something to be conscious of, folks. I know I'm drumming on about apartments, but it's really important that we don't bring our own preconceived ideas into our investing arena and miss out on opportunity because we're not willing to learn something new or be open to find out more about something that normally we'd be closed to. So just food for thought today. Anything else that you think it's important people understand about the investing journey? Any lessons?
Look, I think always make sure that you look good from a lending perspective. I think that's one of the errors that I made as a small business owner is I was so fixated on not paying tax, on paying as little tax as what I needed to pay, that I would then not look good to lenders, basically. And and that really shoots you, you know, shoots you in the foot. When really, if I had my time again, I would go back and I would make myself look good to lenders and I would lend a lot more, invest a lot earlier and, you know, reap the rewards of that.
It is an important lesson. We were the same. Vin had a graphic design business. We minimized our position to pay as little tax and did ourselves 5 years having to sit out the market. So, you know, because we couldn't get lending because we didn't want to pay tax. And listen, we all hate paying tax. The social side of me says it's really important for looking after the community. But it is frustrating when you, you know, when maybe those, anyway, I won't make political statements about stuff, but tax dollars not being spent well. But helicopters. I've never forgotten Bronwyn, what's her name, flying a helicopter around New South Wales thinking that's my bloody tax money. anyway, I'm getting like Jace. I'm getting ranty in my old
No, I mean, look, I think that the other thing is too that unless you communicate with your accountant and on that as well, like accountants generally will feel that they have a mandate to do that for you and to try and minimize your tax and 100%. All the rest of it. But if you don't work with your accountant and your broker to get the best outcome, then you're shooting yourself in the foot because, yeah, sure, you might save a couple of grand here on tax, but as you've just said, like you then sit out of the market for 5 years. And if that, if you've had a boom in that time, you could have, you know, lost yourself half a million dollars.
I know, it's like, la. Yeah. Don't worry, I do it to myself at 1 a.m. in the morning. The one that got away like 10 times. Yes, very wise. And I think an important tip for the small business owners and, you know, larger business owners that are out there in the market wanting somewhere to park some of what they're creating, because from what I understand with what you do with the exit plan, like a lot of people think their businesses are their retirement. And I can tell you from our perspective, running a small business, we had, I think at the peak about 16 team, and you know, it was a good, healthy, profitable graphic design business. We decided to exit it for personal reasons, and Vin had a business partner. And so we were looking at selling him our 50%. Now, he brought in somebody who negotiated hard. Do you know what we got for it?
Nope.
$60K.
Wow.
Because it was based on our relationship with clients, And all of that stuff, it wasn't something that had an income that was, what's it called? I can't remember the term. It was just based on our next client. And we had the client relationships. So if we weren't there, what was it worth?
Yeah.
That was a massive wake up call.
Yes. Yes. And that's the thing, like, you know, I think people can have a bit of sort of rose colored glasses, if you like, in terms of when they start out in business, they think, yeah, that's, you know, I'm going to sell this one day for $1 million or.
That was 160. I shot myself in the foot then, 160, but it still was nothing compared to what it's, you know, what it's true value blood, sweat, was and what we were pulling out as dividends and all of that kind of stuff. Like it was laughable. Yeah. I thought, really 60, was it that bad? And then it was like, no, it was 160. But yeah, no, we were looking for a lot more than that initially, and that just wasn't going to happen.
And I think that's it. Like a lot of people, they go into business with the rose colored glasses on, but even if not, the other thing is too, there's so many different things that can happen in business that come along and sideswipe. You're like, whoever thought COVID was coming? How many successful businesses went absolutely sideways when COVID came in? Some did, some, you know, flourished, which was great as well. But, you know, so there's all the different potholes that you can fall in when you're in business. And a lot of people, what they don't actually understand is everything's intertwined. So if they lose their business, they lose their property, they lose the house that they live in, like they're so tied up. And that's one of the things that I love about what, you know, we do with the exit plan, and I know Jason and Andy are so passionate about, is helping people get themselves set up securely so that, you know, if something does happen with the business, then they're safe, it's okay. And also when they do exit the business, that they've maximized themselves in terms of, you know, being in a most sort of tax efficient structure and everything else, so that when they do exit, they exit at a maximum and get the maximum sort of tax advantage and all of that kind of thing. So it's been great because it's been able to sort of intertwine those two passions of mine, which has been business and property. And very, awesome. Very blessed.
And certainly it just really drummed home for Vin and I how important, you know, because we had that business when we were in our 30s and sold out of it at about, I think Vin was 35 and I was 37. And I just remember, you know, thinking, geez, I've got time to really give it a good crack now that I've learned all this stuff. And I always said I wouldn't do property because my parents were mad property investors. And I was always like, nah, I'm not doing what they did. Because to me, that looked like hard work and renovations by hand. But then I found there's multiple ways to invest in property. It doesn't all have to be hard work with you on the sander every bloody weekend. So although some people like that, I get that. It's funny the lessons we bring with us. And so on that note, that's a good segue for me. My favorite question, the classic podcast question, if you could go back in time and see young Deb, 22-year-old Deb, what advice would you give Deb based on your life journey so far?
What I would say, I think, is an important lesson is it's not what you earn, it's what you keep.
Yep.
But
very good.
What you earn allows what you keep to be a lot more. So focus on, you know, a good career, a good, you know, wage and whatnot, and then put it to work.
Nice. Very important. Anything else on that note?
Don't sweat the small stuff. And at the end of the day, it's all pretty small.
Isn't that just so true, though? I knew there was another good gem in there. Don't sweat the small stuff. Oh, yeah. I need that printed up and put, like, bang there. I'll say, Deb says, reminder, Deb says, don't sweat the small stuff. I definitely have the type of personality that can ruminate on things and make things bigger than they need to be. But it also,
I think we all do it sometimes. Yeah. Tab, like, honestly, I think anybody that says they don't is not being completely honest.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, there's one exception I reckon to that, and that would have to be our COO, Ian Sampson.
Yep.
I've very, very seldom seen him stressed. I think he's amazing as operations, although,
yep,
I think he's probably got it as down pat as I think anyone living can.
Well, and I guess there's a bit of a flip side to that, though, too, because another saying I've heard, which I think is also true, is count your pennies and your pounds will grow.
Very true.
So if you can watch just the dollars and cents of what's kind of leaking out of the bottom of the bucket,
wealth
and
leakage,
really keep an eye on that, the other stuff will grow. You don't have to always have this big, you know, up here. It's actually just keeping track of what's falling out
so,
the bottom.
So true. Yeah, wealth leakage, I think I've heard Jason refer to it as, and that is absolutely A1, an awesome tip. All righty. So fantastic talk with you today, my friend. Thank you so much. And that's it for today's podcast. And we'll see you this is episode number 71, Deb. So we'll see you guys for episode number 72. I'm yet to work out who that's going to be, but clients, if you would like to be interviewed, please put your hand up and let your coach know. They're welcome to interview you as well. It doesn't have to be me. And we'll see Deb on episode 71. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Bye for now.
Hey, thanks for listening to Property Investor Tales. Remember to subscribe so you get notified every time a new episode drops. As you can guess, I love hearing people's property investor tales. So if you'd like to share yours, then please get in touch with me via email at propertyinvestortales@positivementor.com.au. We would also love your feedback, and I would appreciate a 5-star review over on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Remember, you can watch all of these podcasts over on YouTube at Positive Mentor or at positivementor.com.au. Until then, take care, happy investing, and bye for now.